This is the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show, brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Farrah & Farrah, Brooks Rehabilitation, Wells Fargo, Geico, Sonny's Barbecue, Cars.com, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Now, to get things started, here's Cole Pepper.
The season ends with a 19-13 Jaguars victory over Indianapolis. It's the first time the Jaguars have ended the regular season with a win since 2005. And they finish with a 5-11 mark. The Colts, 2-14, will have the first pick of the draft. And the Colts are now on the clock. And with the first pick of the NFL draft, the Colts will select Andrew Luck.
Cole Pepper.
A long way away from that. No chance of that. But the Jaguars with a win, and Marco Coleman, the word that Wayne Weaver used so many times since announcing the sale of the team to describe his feelings was bittersweet. And in a way, that's sort of what this game was as well, in a number of different ways. Number one, the end of the Weaver era. Certainly, I thought a great lasting tribute, putting the Weavers into the pride of the Jaguars at halftime. That was a great thing that they didn't know about, as I mentioned, coming in. But at the same time, you finish with a win. Hey, that's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if Andrew Luck winds up being what people think he's going to be, and there's absolutely no way to know that, of course, that's the future, but you'd say, uh-oh. Now you've gone through Peyton Manning, and now Andrew Luck next. A lot of bittersweet angles on this one, I think.
Yeah, I would have to say. I mean, definitely game ball has to go to the Weavers, taking it out the last game as owners, you know, on a really good note. I mean, great weather. Team played great despite all the different issues. I think it couldn't have been a better way for them to end to have a last game with the tribute. It was really a good day. Really good day.
And Maurice Jones-Drew not only wins the NFL rushing title, He not only breaks Fred Taylor's franchise record, but he eclipses 1,600 yards rushing for the year, which means he averaged over 100 yards a game. That doesn't happen very often in the NFL, particularly not in this pass-happy version of the NFL.
And when that's all that you do is run the ball, and every team, every person in the universe knows that you are going to get the ball, and they'll line 9 people, sometimes all 11, to try to stop you. I mean, a magnificent job, not just by MJD, but the offensive line. The fullback Greg Jones, those guys all season long were very consistent in getting that rush done.
All right, we will have Maurice Jones-Drew here in Jaguars Central a little bit later on. Also scheduled to have Paul Posluszny, but not sure based on the injury whether he'll make it in or not. The talk that Jeff will certainly have interviews in the locker room from Coach Mel Tucker here in just a moment, and then also other players to reflect on the season that was. All right, let's get you updated on some other scores. Try to do the best we can in trying to sort out what the scores mean as far as the postseason picture in the National Football League. Tennessee needed to win and get some help, and they're winning right now, beating Houston 23-16. Matt Hasselbeck just finding Nate Washington on a 23-yard touchdown. And with 4:31 to play, it's a 23-16 Tennessee lead. Houston will get the ball after a kickoff coming up from Tennessee, so we'll keep a close eye on that ball game. Detroit and Green Bay has been a real back-and-forth affair. Jordy Nelson has a couple of touchdown catches. Matt Flynn in for the resting Aaron Rodgers has had a big day. He has 3 touchdown passes, making 4 touchdown passes thus far. And for Matt Stafford, he has 4 touchdown passes, the latest to Kevin Smith from 5 yards out. They converted a 2-point conversion, so Detroit has a 3-point lead now, 34-31. This has been a slow-moving game with all the passing. Still a minute to play in the third quarter in that ball game. So a long way to go there. New Orleans is polishing off Carolina, and Drew Brees is doing it in remarkable style. Are they trying to pad Brees' stats to try to get him the MVP, or try to earn some MVP awards? Brees, 28 of 35, 389 yards, 5 touchdowns, and a quarterback rating of 140 in the final game. Brees is now out. Chase Daniel has been put in. But 5 touchdown passes for Brees, including the most recent, the last coming in the fourth quarter, with Brees finding Darren Sproles, 45-17, New Orleans leading Carolina. They're at the 2-minute warning now in the fourth quarter. Miami leading the Jets. The Jets, just not getting it done, and they trail 19-10 now with Miami out front. Matt Morris on a touchdown. Mark Sanchez, who's come under a lot of fire, threw a touchdown pass to Justin Keller early in the ballgame. There are reports out of New York that there could be some major changes to the Jets' offensive coaching staff coming up here in just a bit. We have a lot more scores we'll get you updated on as we continue on. But for now, let's head back upstairs and check in with Brian Sexton.
I wanted to share with you, there's something unusual has happened. The Jaguars players have come back out of the locker room and are walking around the field and saying thank you to the fans, congratulating them, slapping high fives. You look down there and you see all of them out there. They don't do this very often. I don't think I've ever seen it done. But it's kind of a nice touch here at the end of a season that was not a fun season. And these are the fans who were here week in and week out, helped us get the team and the games on TV, and now the cheerleaders are joining in there as well. Jeff Lagerman joins me from the locker room, which means we'll be just slightly delayed in getting things started here. But a nice touch on the part of the players and leading the charge is Maurice Jones-Drew, Jeff.
Yeah, I think you're right, Brian. And it was I don't think it was anything planned, rehearsed, or that, you know, the coaches did. I think this was just kind of all the players decided to go out there and thank the fans, and certainly a nice gesture on their part. And it is truly heartfelt. And it's an emotional day, you know, for the fans, but also for a lot of these coaches, Brian. I mean, the future is uncertain for a lot of them, and so it's a tough time for a lot of them.
You know, looking through some of the tweets from some of the national media, a lot of them are suggesting that the Jaguars will rue the day that they beat the Colts, because now the Colts have the first overall pick and they will select Andrew Luck. I marvel at that thought, you know, because it's about winning.
No, that's not what it's about. You know, to me, I look at it as, hey, it's the first time that the Jaguars ever swept the Colts, you know, since the AFC South was formed years
right.
ago. So, I mean, I look at it as a positive.
Well, and remember, the New England Patriots grabbed the greatest quarterback that we have seen in terms of championships since Joe Montana, Tom Brady, in the sixth round back in 2000. So, I mean, maybe he comes at the top of the draft. Who knows?
Well, Brian, you know, you look back at the draft and all these people that were, you know, predicted to be the best ever at their position, the greatest prospect since whoever.
Prospect.
You know, and I can think back of a lot of prospects that were viewed in that light, and one of them was Tony Mandarich, was viewed as the best offensive line prospect in decades. It didn't work out.
The Packers let Barry Sanders slide through their grasp.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he torched him.
No guarantees, and it's certainly not a guarantee at the quarterback position. It's the hardest position to play in all of professional sports, and just because they're able to draft Andrew Luck and the Jaguars won the last game to enable them to have that draft position, it doesn't mean anything yet.
Get some thoughts from you on the Jaguars' numbers here. And, of course, these numbers and all of the statistics brought to you in the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show and the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show, brought to you by our friends at Wells Fargo. Jaguars finished today, Jeff, with 261 total yards, 190 of those on the ground, only 71 of them from the passing attack. Blaine Gabbert was 11 of 19 for 92 yards and a touchdown. Passer rating of 88. His leading receiver was Mercedes, three catches for 33. Kasim Osgood had two for 19, and then it was a cast of who, what, where, why, and when for a catch, a catch, a catch, a catch. Give us your thoughts on Blaine Gabbert's performance today.
Well, I think he continued to do what he's done all year long, and that showed glimpses of a quarterback that has an extremely talented arm. And when he gets some stability, a full off season, and the experience, I think he's going to be a fantastic player. And it's going to be critical that, you know, they part of the hiring process, when they look at the head coach, the person that's going to help him along with the offense is critical. And I think him having had, 14 games now of starting
yes.
in the National Football League after today, which is a Jaguars record, is something that you just can't discount to make him better for the future. Sometimes you got to pay the price to reap the rewards later, and hopefully that's the case here.
The throw he made to Chaston West for the touchdown was just like the one that he made to Chaston West in Atlanta. You couldn't have asked for a better throw. It was a laser, and that's what his arm will produce. I'm looking right now as Maurice Jones-Drew is having a picture taken with his offensive lineman on the field the day that he cemented the first rushing title for a Jaguars football team in franchise history. 25 carries today, 169 yards, a season high for him, 6.8 per. Finishes the year with 1,606 yards rushing, 1,980 yards rushing receiving, or yards from scrimmage. Both of them single-season Jaguars records. He was magnificent today, and he didn't practice at all this week.
No, he didn't practice at all, and he's, you know, obviously going to be our receiver of the watch for player of the game. But
how many did he get this year? Did we tally that up? Like,
I don't know. I mean, how many should he have won? I mean, 16. Would probably be the more important question. But you know, the one I think reward that's going to be handed out today that will be very special will be the game ball. And there's only one person that's deserving of the game ball, and that's Wayne Weaver.
Absolutely, and that will come, no doubt. We probably have that on Jaguars All Access tomorrow night. The watch that Logs referred to, the Bueller Swiss Watch MVP, it's the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get yours, folks, at Jacobs Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Lorraine's Diamond Tree in Middleburg, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. We roll along here. This portion of the Winn-Dixie postgame show brought to you by Cars.com. So the Jaguars, 261 yards of offense, 71 from the passing game, 190 on the ground, 5 of 13 on third down. Gave you the quarterback's numbers, the receiver's numbers. Maurice Jones-Drew, 25 for 169. He also had one reception for 4 yards for 173 yards total for him today. The Jaguars also had three takeaways, two interceptions, and they corralled a fumble. Jeremy Mincy had two sacks and two forced fumbles on those sacks. Finishes the year with 7.5, which is a career high for him. Orlovsky was 27 of 40 for 264 yards, one touchdown, two interceptions. His passer rating 73.3 for the Colts in defeat. Donald Brown, 8 for 24. He'd been averaging 5 yards per carry, just 3 today. Joe Adai, 8 for 19, 2.4. Colts leading receiver, a bid for his first 1,000-yard season. So there are the numbers. Colts, 298 yards of offense, 242 for the passing game, only 56 on the ground. And, of course, the three turnovers, which helped the Jaguars grab a couple of field goals that turned out to be the difference there. Jaguars control, time of possession, 30 minutes, 48 seconds, 29-12 for the Indianapolis Colts. We are waiting for head coach Mel Tucker and the Bubba Burgers coaches report. He also will give us an update, hopefully, on Paul Posluszny with an injury report brought to you by Brooks Rehabilitation. Of course, we will have a Bud play of the game interspersed there with some interviews from the Jaguars locker room. A glorious day in terms of the weather, a big win for Mr. and Mrs. Weaver, who were put into the pride of the Jaguars today. We're told they did not know about it, that there were only a handful of people. Now, I was down on the field at about 11:15, and I looked and I saw a tarp hanging there, and I said, well, I guess they're going to do that.
Hey, Brian.
Today. Yes.
I thought they did a masterful job with the tarp because it matched exactly what had been all up there all along. So, I mean, I don't think Wayne Weaver had any idea, because watching his reaction when it was unveiled, I mean, he just immediately turned and just bear hugged Mackie Weaver, his nephew. So I think it was total surprise on Wayne Weaver's part and Dolores' part as well.
Well, and I was texting back and forth with Tony Baselli today, trying to find out whether he knew anything about it. Obviously, he's the only other member of the pride of the Jaguars, and he didn't. In fact, he expressed his disappointment at not being able to be here on that day. Obviously, he has a very close relationship with Wayne and Dolores, and wished them well via text message, and I'm obviously sharing that with our listeners right now. And the win is the important part, Jeff, because the culture around here had been lose at the end of the season. And I'm not suggesting that this win is anything more than a win to make some of these guys feel good and to send the Weavers off. But I tell you, from my own perspective, I think it means a little something to this franchise, which had just kind of stumbled at the end of the Jack Del Rio era.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that you got to change. I mean, you got to be an ascending team at the end of the year if you're going to expect to improve and expect to be able to compete for a Super Bowl title, and that's what you play the game for. You know, but I mean, the win to me has got a lot of significance. One, it's going to change the way things have gone over the last number of years, but most importantly, sending Wayne Weaver out on a positive note. You know, Wayne Weaver deserves this day. He deserves this victory. Today was all about him, and he's the man who brought the National Football League to Jacksonville, and that's enough said.
Have you seen him walk by in the hallway to make his way into the locker room?
I have not, Brian, but from what I understand, after Mel Tucker gets done talking with the team in the locker room, I have not seen them, but I think Wayne Weaver and Shad Khan are in the locker room together, and they're supposed to have a little press conference out here in the hallway outside the locker room after Mel gets done talking with the team.
Yeah, and you know what? It was a very classy move. Mr. Khan was here with a contingent of family and friends, and he did not step into the spotlight at all. He stayed off to the side. His day is coming on Wednesday, although it appears obviously we'll hear from him at some point here in the postgame show.
But yeah, classy move on his part, you're right, by letting Wayne and the Weaver family, Dolores, have that spotlight because it's much deserved.
Jaguars beat the Colts 19-13 today. Sweep the Colts, go 3-3 in the division for the third consecutive year. Break that six-year losing streak at the end of the season. Break a two-game losing streak, what would have been a three-game losing streak. So many things to talk about. Maurice's numbers, we'll revel in those. The Weavers' final game. And, of course, we'll continue with the Winn-Dixie postgame show. And the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show will follow, where Cole and Marco will have an opportunity to take your calls, questions, and comments. A beautiful day for football. The sun is shining now. Still some fans just kind of lingering around up on the Sky Patio deck in the south end zone and making their way around. Let's take a break. We will come back. More of the Winn-Dixie postgame show from the booth, from the locker room, and from Jaguars Central, where Cole and Marco are standing by. Back after this on Jaguars Radio. And welcome back to the Winn-Dixie postgame show, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Jaguars finished the season 5-11 with a 19-13 win over the Indianapolis Colts. 3-3 in the division. Not the kind of season anybody wanted, but obviously that has long since been a conclusion that we have reached. And now we are talking about a move forward. In the next couple of weeks, the Jaguars will have a new coach. In the next couple of days, the Jaguars will have a new owner. And Jeff Loggeman, who's standing by in the Jaguars locker room, we expect to have head coach Mel Tucker join us. Interim head coach, obviously. He is a part of the process that will now begin in earnest to find Jack Del Rio's replacement and the third head coach in Jaguars history. A lot of your former teammates represented on the Jumbotron here today, Jeff, sharing their thoughts about Wayne and Dolores. And I know that you were expecting Mr. Weaver to come out at some point. You've seen him a lot in the post games over the last 9 years. What do you expect the smile to be like today?
Well, I just, on my way into the locker room, happened to see him on his way out to talk with the media and gave him a big hug. And I said, man, the last one was a good one, and it was a win, and it was a nice moment.
You bet. And he and Dolores obviously will forever cherish the gold helmets they were presented with today and their name in the pride of the Jaguars.
Well, you know, Brian, it was funny. I came into the stadium on Friday, and on Wednesday's radio show I had mentioned I'd asked Wayne if he'd ever had a player, former player, ever ask him for an autograph, and he said no. And I came into the stadium on Friday of a picture that I had of me and him from when we were both a lot younger. It was the inaugural game back in 95 where we were shaking hands before that game or after that game. I think it was before the game. And had him sign the picture for me. And I'm looking forward to having it matted and framed. It's going to be something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life.
Wayne is that kind of a person, folks. He is a good man, and he helped do great things, not just for his football team and for those of us who were surrounding it, but for a lot of people in this community. And the stories will go on and on and on. And Mr. Kahn, with a very nice move to have essentially a letter, an editorial, in the Florida Times Union this morning, in which he expressed his desire to take it to another level and to do it in the vein of community that Wayne and Dolores reached out for, and I know a lot of people were touched by that. Still waiting on head coach Mel Tucker to join Jeff, and that obviously presented by Bubba Burgers. And we will hear. Heard anything at all on the injury front with respect to Puzlesny, who left with a shoulder sprain?
I haven't heard anything on it yet, but Paul just walked by. He's not wearing any kind of shoulder splint or anything like that, so I mean that's a good sign. Hopefully, there's Maurice. Hey.
That injury report brought to you by Brooks Rehabilitation.
Maurice just walked by. He's heading to a press conference. Obviously, a lot of people want to talk to him about leading the league in rushing and also breaking two of the Jaguars' records, season records today.
And Maurice will join Paul Puzlesny and Marco and Cole in the radio studio for part of the Winn-Dixie postgame show, Southern Ford Dealers, depending on how the whole thing times out. I'm looking right now at the grounds crew, which is getting set to start painting for tomorrow's Gator Bowl game. The Florida Gators are here against Ohio State, and the end zones today said Jacksonville instead of Jaguars. Still in white numerals, white lettering, trimmed in black and gold, but Jacksonville instead of Jaguars, and they'll have to paint over the Jaguars logo there at midfield. And it's the TaxSlayer.com Gator Bowl. And so those folks are going to have their logo painted all over the field here. Obviously, we are stretching and filling and waiting to hear from head coach Mel Tucker. He's still talking to the team, Loggy. I guess not.
Excuse me, Brian.
Is Mel still talking to the team?
No. He's been long done with that, and I think he's moving around the locker room, thanking guys for their effort since he was named interim head coach. And Dan Weaver kind of warned me that it might be a while before we get Mel. And understandably so. For a lot of coaches, it might be the last time that they get to talk to these guys in the locker room. You just don't know.
Normally, the process is the players would show up tomorrow for a checkout, right? And what's that checkout process like, Logs, for these players? They're going to do it Tuesday because of the Gator Bowl, but what is the checkout process for these guys as they head into the offseason?
Well, on a typical year, you come in, you get a postseason physical, you have a meeting with your coach, and usually a brief meeting with the head coach, but obviously with the unknown, it will be a physical, which you have to do before you leave. And then I would imagine that some of the coaches are still going to be here, and I'm sure we'll shake hands and say goodbye to a lot of these guys, but you never know. I mean, there could be some that are retained. There could be some that are gone, and you just never know. And that's the great uncertainty of the future. When the transaction happens on Wednesday, I'm sure that changes are going to be coming, whether it be, position coaches. Obviously, there will be some changes made and maybe great changes. You just don't know throughout the organization.
Is there any sort of an analysis and evaluation of the player's performance, or does that wait until the guys would come back in the spring?
I think that's more of a – I think certainly there will be position coaches that talk to the guys about, the type of year that they had. But the evaluation stuff, I'm sure, will happen with Gene Smith. That's going to be the consistent part going forward. And so you'd expect Gene Smith to probably have some exit meetings with the players as well.
We've talked about Maurice Jones-Drew and about Blaine Gabbert. Let's talk for a moment about a few other guys and evaluate their season. And we'll go right to the difficult one, and that's Mercedes Lewis. 10 touchdowns in a Pro Bowl year in 2010, 0 touchdowns in 2011. And there are a lot of people that scratch their head and say, how does that happen? He had a couple of catches today. It was good to see him get involved. Your thoughts
on
–
Brian, I got Mel here, we're going to go ahead and get right to it. Mel, congratulations to win the last game of the year, and most importantly, big picture stuff, to send the Weavers out with a win was truly a big thing to do.
Yeah, that was huge. We really wanted to get that done. We were playing for the Weavers. We all know that, and I think everyone gave a little extra today, and so we were happy we were able to give Mr. Weaver that game ball in the locker room today. It means a lot to him and his family, and it means a lot to us, and so it was a great day for the Jags.
This is an emotional day. I'm seeing the coaches walk in and out, the great uncertainty of what the future holds for this football team, and you've been told that you're going to have an opportunity to interview. You're the interim head coach right now, but It's kind of a sad time, isn't it, beyond the Wayne Weaver thing, but the uncertainty about the future?
Well, I think there's quite a few mixed emotions right now. You can only control what you can control. And I think that this football team, these coaches and players, have done a great job down the stretch here, just focusing on the task at hand. And that was doing everything we could to win football games. We were able to end on a high note. Now going into the off season, like I told the players, the picture is cloudy right now, but it will become crystal clear here at some point. And one thing that we do know that here it will be about winning championships. That's what it's going to be about. And so we'll just see how it unfolds and who the players are and what seat on the bus that the people will be on. But the Jaguars are on the rise.
Today was a big day for Maurice Jones-Drew. He ends the day as the NFL's rushing title holder. He sets a couple franchise records for rushing yards in a season, also total yards from scrimmage in a season. What a game. His season best game, I guess you could say, and that's just Maurice, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's the ultimate competitor. I mean, I can't say it enough. It's really it's really an honor and a privilege to be able to work with a player like that, because you don't see players. You could go an entire career and not have an opportunity to work with a player like that. So he's the type of guy that makes everyone better around him, coaches and players. He's very unselfish. He gives credit where credit is due, you know, to his offensive line, his offense. And so I'm very, very happy for him and our offense of what they were able to get done this year in the running game.
Mel, I want to say congratulations on a great job by the defense all year. Holy cow, you guys. Looks like you're going to end up top five. And the performance the transition that you've been able to make from last year to this year for the defense has been nothing short of dramatic.
Well, you know, first and foremost, you know, good players will make you a good coach. And Gene Smith and his staff did a great job in the out of season and helping us retool. And then we were able to identify what our players could do best and do those things and as much as possible. And we want to try to be the best in the league at what we do. And so the players bought in 100% and the coaches as well. And so together we were able to accomplish some things. And now, you know, we laid a foundation and we want to build on it for the future.
Let me add this, and Brian, I think, would echo these comments, that you have really put a touch of class in our lives in dealing with you week in and week out, and me and Brian, thank you for that.
No, I appreciate working with you and Brian. You know, it's you can't do anything alone in life, and especially here in football. It's not just the coaches and the players, but it's everyone involved in the front office, the media outlets that we have here, the trainers, the equipment, you know, food service, you know, everyone is important and everyone has a role and every role is significant. And so I just appreciate the efforts of everyone here to, you know, help me get my job done, help me be better. And so this is just a great organization and I'm very excited about what this organization can do in the future.
The only last question here, Paul Posluszny, holy cow, had to be helped off the field. Is he okay?
Yeah, I think Paul's going to be okay. I'm not sure the extent of his injury, and so we'll know more here in the next couple of days.
Thank you, Mel.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Jeff, I totally agree. Mel Tucker was a pleasure to deal with, a guy who is eager to talk to the fans and eager to share his thoughts week in and week out. We'll take a break, come back, more of the Winn-Dixie postgame show from the booth, from the locker room, and from Jaguars Central. We return on the Jaguars Radio Network. All right, welcome back to the Winn-Dixie postgame show live from Everbank Field. Jaguars finished 5-11. Big reason why was the Jaguars' ability to put pressure on the quarterback today. Jeremy Mincy finished with 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. Jeff Loggeman has him in the locker room. That's 7.5 on the season for him, Jeff.
Thank you, Brian. Brian just said 7.5 sacks on the season for you and 4.5 against the Indianapolis Colts. And Mincy, no better way to do it than the last game that Wayne Weaver is the owner of the Jaguars.
Oh, yeah. We came out to play, man. From the beginning, that's how we talked about this week. Going out with a bang, playing as a family, playing together, and that's what we did. Played as a team and we came to play.
Mel Tucker finishes the year up as the interim head coach. You know, and I'm sure that he had said that to me that, you know, the future is cloudy, but things will clear up. Your thoughts on the job that Mel was able to do and the future of this football team?
Mel has done a great job, man. He pounds us every day, relentless, go to play. We're professionals. This is our job. And take it like a man and stand up like a man and do your job to the fullest. And that's what he preached, and it showed on the field, man. We got out there and played.
Maurice Jones-Drew, the league's rushing title winner, sets a couple of franchise records today. Truly an amazing player.
Man, I don't have many words for Mojo, man, other than warrior, man. He's a true warrior, man. Mojo gets it done inside out. 10 in the box, 11 in the box, 8 in the box. How many got in the box? Mojo's going to run the ball. And kudos to him, man. He's just a great player, man.
An off-season question. Jeremy Mincy, his contract is up. Going to be a free agent. Thoughts on the future?
I definitely want to be a Jaguar. You know, I'm just waiting. Waiting for the cards to fall in my hand, and we'll see how it all work out, man, in the end.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, man.
All right, Logs, thank you so much for your work in the locker room and all season long. And for those of you in Jacksonville, you can catch us on Jaguars All Access tomorrow night on CBS 47 at 7 o'clock. We've got 3 more coaches shows. Expect to have Mel Tucker with us on Tuesday this week, and then we've got Jaguars this week on News Talk WOKV. The 1 hour edition begins this week. All right, time for our Bud play of the game. Then we'll pass it off to Marco and Cole. This one's easy. It came early in the third quarter, and Maurice Jones-Drew took the handoff and raced to the Jaguars' single-season rushing title. Here's the handoff to Maurice, looking for room, tries to go back to the right. He's got a hole. Here he's at 35. Oh, big hole! He's gone! Maurice Jones-Drew, 50. He's to the 40. He's to the 30. Maurice Jones-Drew to the 20. Stays on his feet to the 15-yard line.
Guy had the
angle
on him.
He was almost there.
Yeah, he was
Kevin
almost
Thomas
there.
Thomas chased him down.
That right there gives him the franchise record, if I'm correct. That's about 55 yards,
yeah, about
isn't
55, 56
that's enough.
Yards.
He is now the single-season rushing record holder.
Topping Fred Taylor's previous record of 1,572 yards that Fred established in 2003. Also that year, Fred had 1,942 yards from scrimmage. That is rushing plus receiving. And Maurice finishes with 1,980. A remarkable year for Maurice Jones-Drew. And we say goodbye with the thought that Maurice will be on TV on All Access with us tomorrow night so we can wrap things up nicely. Want to take a quick moment, thank the guys at CopyFax, Jason DeFore and his team. Every week they printed our charts in brilliant color. They are the exclusive and only supplier of business machines to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they do a great job, especially during the holiday week. Happy New Year to Jason and the whole crew over there at CopyFax. My spotter on the road all season long was John Dineen. My spotter at home, TJ Streit. Both Atlantic Beach's finest. Appreciate TJ today. Scott Kushner dealt with all kinds of issues with the equipment this year, bounced on and off of airplanes, kept us on the air. Scotty, we really appreciate it. Best in the business. And, folks, I say it and I joke, and sometimes I actually mean it. But, no, the truth is that Joe Fortunato is as good a radio producer as you'll find on any station, on any network. Radio for baseball, basketball, hockey, table tennis, right? He is the absolute best, and Jeff and I could not do our job without him. There is an entire crew that Cole and Marco will say the exact same about, or they better say the exact same about. Joining them now for the continuation of the Winn-Dixie postgame show live from Jaguar Center. We take this break and return with that on Jaguars Radio. Happy New Year.
We welcome you back to the Winn-Dixie postgame show. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman, live here in Jaguar Central following the Jaguars' 19-13 victory over the Indianapolis Colts. GEICO could help you save on more than just car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO for a free quote on motorcycle, renter's insurance, and more. And don't worry, GEICO won't throw a flag for excessive celebration. All right, the Jaguars with a victory today. Of course, now we start looking forward to what Gene Smith calls not the off-season, but the out-of-season. Just means you're not in the season, but you're still working.
Still working.
And free agency, coaching search, the draft, the three big topics that will likely be dominating Jaguars news in the offseason. Marco, you know, one of the things that I think you have to look at now, and we'll try to sort through it as we continue on here, is what are things that will look like in terms of the Jaguars' first-round pick? You know, where are they going to pick? It'll be no higher than third and no lower than seventh. And I'm looking at some of the results of other games. Washington and Miami also at 5-11. And then Cleveland and Tampa Bay are at 4-11 with their games getting underway now. The Colts and Rams both with 2-14 seasons. And then you have the Vikings who finish at 3-13. So they'll have the third pick of the draft. So it'll be somewhere between 4 and 7 the Jaguars will be drafting, if I'm doing my math right here. And as Brian likes to often point out, we weren't math majors at KU. We were worried about journalism and
corn.
So yeah.
Wheat.
Somewhere between 4 and 7 basketball, right? Somewhere between 4 and 7 for the Jaguars in that first round. So we'll talk a little bit about that. That'll certainly be one of the topics as we go forward. Just to give you a verbal retweet of a Jaguars insider tweet. The Jaguars are undefeated in 2012.
There it is.
Okay. Just to point that out, undefeated in 2012. Let's do a big picture look back. What are you going to take away from this season? What was accomplished, and what were the most significant things that happened in this season in terms of, you know, propelling the Jaguars forward?
Well, the toughness. I think you saw a team that is very tough. When you can run the ball consistently, not only does it say a lot about Maurice Jones-Drew, it says a lot about those guys that are blocking. They're physical. They are consistent in doing it, and you're gonna have to worry about that for as long as these Jags are, you know, they got, at least as long as they have Maurice Jones-Drew, and that defense, you know, they've upgraded significantly. Now you have with Rasheem possibly being a free agent. Now you're going to have to do something to kind of help in that area. Then I think, well, you got young Prozinski that could probably come back up, you know, probably help the secondary out a lot. But a team that's tough, just a tough, hard-nosed team, and hopefully whoever comes in as a coach maintains that personality, because that's the personality of the players that they have.
One of the things that I think kind of goes in line with what you're talking about, I mean, there are a lot of teams that could have mailed it in at a number of different points for the Jaguars this year. And the collection of guys, the type of personalities that are in that locker room now, so different than what it was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I tell you, it says a lot about a team when in the very last game of the season, you have absolutely nothing to play for, but you still come out and you perform well. I mean, it's easy to play a game where, you know, playoffs is on the line. I mean, you're not going to sleep the night before. That's not tough at all for him. That's the easy thing to do. But for Gene Smith, evaluating what he has as players right now, it's going to be tough to determine who he doesn't want, because all those guys showed up today. I didn't see anybody that packed it in. You know, they all played hard, and you saw that they all have a passion for the game. There's nothing on the line. So now how do you feel about the actual game, football? And you have a strong collection of guys that just love the game.
What do you think about Blaine Gabbert's play today?
Still inconsistent. And he has to be able to play as good as he does in the first half and the second half. You figure the first quarter, you know, made six, you know, 5 out of 6 completions. Third quarter, only 1 out of 6 completions. I mean, that the fits and starts. Once he gets more consistent, I think we'll see a really good quarterback. He does have, you know, just like any rookie, he got some work to do.
The touchdown pass to Chasten West, boy, he whistled that one in there.
Those flashes, but he has to, like I said, just get consistent. I mean, if he could just play that way the whole game. That's the difference, you know, just putting it together for 4 quarters. You're going to make some mistakes along the way, but you just can't be so good in one part and then so bad the next.
Yep, no doubt about it.
Sorry, my ringtone, superhero.
Superhero ringtone. All right. We'll take time out, come back, talk a little bit about the defense and what happens next for the guys on that side of the football. More of the Winn-Dixie postgame show to come right here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back. Winn-Dixie postgame show continues. Jaguars for the victory today, 19-13 over the Indianapolis Colts. Finished the season at 5-11. Let's talk about the defense. And first, looking back, the performance of the defense this year, going from near the bottom of the National Football League to a top five defense. And we talked about it a number of times, Marco, but pretty dramatic turnaround.
I mean, they actually did better than what I thought. I mean, I didn't think they would make such a huge leap from where they were. I mean, I knew they were going to be better, but they were pretty much outstanding, even despite the injuries. They were able to plug in guys and still maintain a high level of play. And I think the biggest thing was the turnovers. These guys consistently, game in and game out, the bend that don't break, and coming up with a big play when they needed them. They did that all season long.
And you mentioned some of the names the guys will have to plug in going forward. Not sure about Rasheen Mathis. Not sure about what happens there. Not sure about what happens. You know, Matt Roth's a free agent.
Mincy's
got to get Mincy done, don't you? I mean, that's
you hope so.
That's an easy choice to make.
Well, when a season like what he had, it's going to be some other people that are going to be interested in him, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think Mincy wants to be here. That's my read on him. I think all things being equal, and of course all things are usually money, that he would rather be here. So, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. You signed how many free agent contracts in your career?
I signed four.
Yeah. So when you're making those decisions, what factors did you weigh?
Well, you know, you figure early in my career it was really try to get as much money as you possibly can. But then that latter part, you know, I wanted to be someplace where I could win. You know, once you get to a point, if you're fortunate enough to play, you know, at least eight seasons, then it gets to the point where, okay, if I'm going to continue to play, I want to play somewhere where I want. If you haven't won a championship at that point, and then, you know, then you can kind of be a little more, you know, I guess – not chase the dollar so much, you know.
You wouldn't care if it was the 30th ranked defense if you think the team has a chance to win.
If I thought the team could win, yeah. You know, if I could be on a team that I felt has a really good chance to win, and that becomes really important. But I think with Mincy right now in his career, you know, with his family, you know, the way he came into the league, and he wasn't a first round draft pick at this point in time, being a free agent, it's a great opportunity for him to do some things for his family monetarily, and I think that would be the priority.
All right. By the way, just looking at the strength of schedule numbers here again, as we try to sort of predict and project where the Jaguars might wind up in terms of draft pick. The Jaguars are tied with 6 other teams coming into today with the third toughest strength of schedule. Mm. Right? The tiebreaker in the draft is they go with the team with the easiest strength of schedule. In other words, if they had 5 wins and had an easy schedule, they would get a higher draft pick than somebody who had 5 wins but had a tougher schedule. Mm-hmm. So
let me ask you now, I guess when they evaluate the strength of schedule, is it
winning
at the end of the season?
The teams
that you played in their winning percentage.
Right,
okay,
exactly. Gotcha. At the end of the season. So the Broncos, Lions, Colts, Chiefs, Jets, and Chargers.
Jags had a pretty, the teams they played were pretty good.
Yeah, and so the Jaguars with the Broncos, Lions, Colts, Chiefs, Jets, and Chargers all had a 520 winning percentage coming into today. Now, the Jaguars get a little bit of a benefit because the Colts are 2-14, right? So add that into the mix. So instead of 133 and 123, you're talking about 135 and 137. So now all of a sudden the Jaguars go from having the third toughest to something below the midway, less than 500. So, again, there's a lot to try to sort out in terms of strength of schedule for everybody, but those other teams where the Jaguars would have a tiebreak right now with in terms of the draft, Washington and Miami, Tampa Bay and Cleveland are the other teams if they were to win today. However, early on, Tampa Bay doesn't look like they're going to do much. It's still early, but Atlanta has 2 early scores. It's 14-0. Atlanta leading Tampa Bay with 3:24 to play in the first, and there are reports coming out of Tampa that there will be a coaching change there, effective the end of the ball game, so that they'll fire Raheem Morris as the head coach there. Then the other game is the Cleveland Browns, the other team that and they're playing Pittsburgh right now. Roethlisberger did get the start, not going to go the whole way, but he is in there right now in a scoreless ball game. With about 5 minutes remaining in the first quarter. So something to keep an eye on there. All right, more to come here on the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show. The Sexton Summary, also still to come. We will have the Baptist Health coverage of the game, the Insurance Office of America bringing you the protector of the game, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all coming up right here on the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here in Jaguars Central. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Stop by Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. All right, time now for the Metro PCS. Sexton Summary, the highlights and lowlights of today's game. Through the calls of the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Each team had a chance in their first possessions. Didn't get it done. Jaguars took the football. 6 plays, 35 yards. And on a 3rd and 9 from the 24, just inside the 24-yard line, the Jaguars' rookie quarterback went to work.
Everett takes the snap, drops to throw, pressure coming, Plants turns, throws, he's got a man, Chaston West inside the 5, breaks 2 tackles and goes to the end zone. What a throw! Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Made it 7-0. Adam Vinatieri's 48-yard field goal on the following possession made it a 7-3 ball game. It was 10-3 at halftime after Josh Scobie's 25-yard boot made it a 10-3 ball game. Also in the first half, an interception by Drew Coleman, one of the pickoffs for the Jaguars defense today. The teams both had first drive of the second half field goals. Vinatieri from 20 yards, Scobie from 32. That 32-yard field goal was set up by this record-breaking play.
Jones and Jones, Drew, set up in beyond. 84 rushing yards so far. Here's the handoff to Maurice, looking for room, tries to go back to the right. He's got a hole. There he's at 35. Oh, a big hole! He's gone! Maurice Jones drew 50. He's to the 40. He's to the 30. Maurice Jones drew to the 20. Stays on his feet to the 15-yard line. Oh, he was almost there. Kevin Thomas chased him down.
That right there gives him the franchise record, if I'm correct. That's about 55 yards,
yeah, about
isn't
55, 56
yards.
That's
enough. Yards. He is now the single-season rushing record holder.
There it was, 56-yard run, breaking Fred Taylor's single-season franchise rushing record. And that set up a Josh Scobie field goal to make it 13-6. On the following possession, another Jaguars defensive performance.
Jags backing off in the middle of the defense. Pressure coming up the middle. Orlovsky has to dump it off at the last minute. Picked off! This one's going back. Russell Allen's got it at the 20. And he is slammed to the ground by Joe Addai.
So the interception by Russell Allen there led to another Scobie field goal from 47 yards out. Jaguars had a 16-6 lead. And a little bit later on in the ball game, with the fourth quarter halfway through, the Jaguars defense did it again.
Orlovsky is going to get hit, sacked, and the ball is free, and it's picked up by the Jaguars. Jeremy Mincy's got two on the game.
Mincy with a sack, forced fumble. George Selvey with a recovery. That set up another Josh Scobie field goal, his fourth of the game from 39 yards out. Indy would counter with a Dan Orlovsky to Austin Colley, touchdown late to make it cosmetic, but Maurice Jones-Drew able to pick up a couple of first downs, go over the 1,600-yard rushing mark, and ice it for the Jaguars as the Jaguars win it 19-13. That was the Metro PCS Sexton summary with no signed contracts. Metro PCS lets you unlimit yourself. We're back with more on the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Winn-Dixie Postgame Show. Cole Pepper, Marco Coleman here after the Jaguars win it 19-13 over the Indianapolis Colts. Before we get to the couple of things to award here, a tweet from Mercedes Lewis. I want to thank all the true Jaguars fans that stuck with us through the adversity. Tough times don't last, but tough people do. Undefeated in 2012.
They recognize that too, huh?
Got that one too. Got a little wink in there. I think Mercedes just needs some time. Just needs to get away from him a little bit.
Yeah,
we know he
season.
Can catch the ball. He didn't catch the ball well this year, but you know he had a couple of nice catches in the ball game today. I think he just kind of needs to cleanse. I expect he'll be back being a weapon next year.
Yeah, you figure for a lot of guys, the offseason really does matter, you know, and you figure, you know, with the lockout and then the holdout. So he was behind, you know, where in a time where getting prepared was crunched together really quickly. You figure I think he missed maybe the first couple of weeks of training, at least the first week or so, mm-hmm. you know, and that may have had a big to do with it. You're not in the rhythm, even though you may work out, but you still aren't in football condition, and you're not taking the time to get yourself with that proper timing. So that may have something to do with it. I know he may be that type of player where he needs off seasons to continue to keep working. And this offseason, I look for him to have a better season next year.
All right, time now for the Baptist Health coverage of the game. Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. Who are you going with the coverage of the game?
Coverage of the game, I got my guy Trent. You know, in that interception at the end of
Morgan
the first
Trent.
Half. Yeah, I thought that was an outstanding play, man. It was a really good catch. He played well.
Wasn't it Coleman? Did Coleman have that? Or then lateraled it?
He got it. Then he lateraled it to Coleman.
To
then
Coleman
lateraled
yeah, okay.
it to Rutland.
I was running out to the field to cover the halftime.
Yeah, they got it around about three or four different guys. Yeah. You know, it was a pretty nice play to end the half. And like I said, Trent, it was a really good interception, really good catch.
Yeah, again, there's a guy who's had a chance to get some experience here.
I really think even though they need upgrade that mm-hmm. position, yeah, it was some nice audition that took place, and some guys that are going to have an opportunity. That competition in that secondary spot during the summer is going to be pretty good.
Here's a little something for Jaguars fans to keep an eye on. Again, the Jaguars will be drafting somewhere between 4 and 7, according to my math, which may or may not be good math. They're going to be somewhere in that range. Mo Claiborne, the LSU cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch him during the national championship game. That's a guy who's expected to be a top 5 pick. So we'll see how that all goes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, time now to name the protector of the game, brought to you by the Insurance Office of America. Who's your protector of the game?
Well, I'm going to have to give it to the entire offensive line, tight ends, and that fullback. I mean, those guys, you watch the Indianapolis Colts offensive line, and they were just mashed. I mean, they created a whole new line of scrimmage, and that takes the offensive line, tight ends, and the fullback in order to do that. Maurice didn't have to worry about, in most instances, being touched until maybe 4 to 5 yards into the line of scrimmage. And that was the case for other guys that came out also. And, I mean, that was an outstanding season by those guys. They should feel just as good about that 1,600 yards as Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah, and none of them got a sniff for the Pro Bowl. None of those guys who blocked for Maurice Drew.
Well, I'm going to tell you, man, when you're 5
and Greg Jones was a third-team alternate, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know, when you're 5-11, it's really tough for guys to give you a whole lot of credit. I mean, it was a great job. It's acknowledged. Now, next season, have a winning season, able to do even close to that same type of thing, I'm pretty sure we'll see some of those guys. Now, remind you, too, that, you know, a lot of times that pass blocking is what gets you into the Pro Bowl, and not a lot of passes thrown. So, you know, they can do it again next year and make it to the playoffs. I think you'll see a lot of Jaguars going over the water.
All right, that's the protector of the game, brought to you by the Insurance Office of America. We'll take time out, come back with the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show here on the Jaguars Radio Network. We welcome you back to the Winn-Dixie postgame show. Culpepper, Marco Coleman here after the Jaguars sweep the Colts for the first time since the AFC South was formed with a 19-13 victory over Indianapolis. Time now for the good, the bad, and the ugly.
I'm going to say good. Getting this win, sending the Weavers out with a win, is all the ceremony and all those things. I think if it would have lost a little bit of luster, those guys couldn't have got this win. By getting that win, it capped off a beautiful day for the Weavers, sending them out with a really great note. And then bad red zone offense, 0-4 down in the red zone. You got to figure out during the offseason how to score once they get an opportunity to get close to that end zone. Ugly, the Jags, the injuries, 31 guys on IR. That's tough, to be able to overcome that type of injuries. Really tough to do, an ugly situation. I hope that all those guys get healthy during the offseason and come back and be better for a better season next year.
All right, that is the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we'll keep it right here as we welcome in the NFL's rushing king for 2011, Maurice Jones-Drew, with family in tow. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The single-season rushing record for the Jags, the rushing mark, and you average over 100 yards a game, which doesn't happen too often, particularly not in this day and age. Which of those means the most to you?
Really, I think going ahead and getting after Fred's rushing record. I mean, obviously, that guy taught me so much, how to be a pro, how to run the ball, how to stay healthy in this game, and to be consistent. And so that and averaging 100 yards a game was something that we wanted to do here. And I think as a whole, as our running game, we did that. I mean, we've been facing 8-9-man boxes. People, sold out sometimes, and we've been able to keep grinding and keep finding a way to get the job done, and we did it.
You broke the record on the long run, and at the end I saw you have a little smile as Mercedes came over to you. I think I know what you were smiling at.
Well, Mercedes did a great job of blocking two guys. He kicked one guy out, then went and got another guy, and you have guys doing stuff like that, it was definitely exciting. Then he was like, you got it. And I wish I would have scored, but
that's what I figured you were going at. And something you mentioned, I think it was last week or a couple weeks ago, maybe after the Atlanta game, talking about how because you were coming back from the knee, you didn't get a chance to do some of the speed work you ordinarily would, and you think you'll be faster next year.
No, definitely. Obviously, coming off knee surgery, there's certain things you can and can't do, and so one of those things was really not being able to get your speed work or your explosiveness. It was really just trying to teach myself how to run again. And we started running in June, so I had from June to August pretty much to teach myself how to run and be able to cut on the dime. And so we worked more on agility than anything. And, it didn't – I guess it paid off in some ways, but I got to get back on the speed work come February.
Well, look, next season you're going to have a new head coach. You had Mel for 4 weeks this year, during the course of the last part of the season. Now, if he's given the opportunity to be the head coach next year, what type of traits – did you see within these last 4 weeks that you think would allow him to be successful if he's still in the position to lead you guys?
I think, in the situation he took the team over, is probably one of the toughest you'll ever see a coach do. Head coach fired in the middle of the season, team sold, players injured, and we found a way to win. For him motivating us to the scheme, to whatever it was, we were finding a way to get the job done. I mean, there's a couple games we didn't play so well, but, for him to keep guys in it, keep guys going, I think that pays a lot. Because a lot of coaches, in our situation we had 31 guys on IR or something like that. That's two. That's your offense and defense right there and special teams. So, we were playing with a lot of guys that were coming off the street, and he was plugging them in, and they were working. And he was finding a way to put them in situations to be successful. When you have a guy that can do that, I definitely think he has probably the best opportunity to be the head coach fully and be able to get guys healthy again and see what he can do with
the
that.
The same voice. I think that would be an advantageous thing, too, for the players, just from my perspective,
definitely.
Having the same voice again next season. As you can see, I'm advocating Mel Tucker.
He's got the Marco Coleman seal of approval.
Once again, we had certain things we were trying to accomplish this year, and it wasn't really individual stats. Last week he called the offensive line called Coach Tucker, and they said that we wanted to get the Jaguars rushing record, and he called me like, "Do you want it?" And I'm like, "Well, obviously I want it, but I want to win first." And he was like, "Well, when you get it, we're gonna win." And I mean, that's what we did. You know, he put it out there for the offense. He challenged everyone to go out there and be physical in the run game, make plays in the passing game so we can continue to run the ball. And when you have a coach that, you know, through all this turmoil, tries to find some positive and to go and strive for that, and that's what we did. And I think that a lot of people have respect for that.
I think fans sometimes overlook, you know, they look at a coach and see the X's and O's and so forth. But the environment that the coach creates, you know, the work environment.
Right.
Somebody who can do that and make that positive environment, those are the coaches that are successful. I mean, you've got to be able to do that, don't you, before you can even – I mean, the X's and O's don't matter if you can't create the right environment.
No, definitely. If it's not fun to come to work and you're not happy to or excited to see what how we're going to attack a team or how we're going to, you know, put a team in situations, you don't need to be here. And I think, once again, coming through those times, I mean – we were all down because we felt like we let Coach Del Rio down. I mean, we were, I don't know, 3-whatever at the time. And for Coach Tucker to come in and take it and be upbeat about it, like, you know, obviously this is a sad time. Take your time off. But when you come back, be ready to work. And his first meeting, I mean, he put up stick figures up there. And it was funny. I'm like, we're in the NFL and we have stick figures on the board. But it was about your body language and how to, you know, never, you know, show a team that you're sad or never show a team that you're mad or whatever. Just keep the body language up and positive. And it was funny, but people really enjoyed that, you know, mm-hmm. And it was a different way of getting his point across. And I think that's one of the reasons, like, a lot of guys bought in because we had different things. I mean, he talked about burning the boats, and the only way we can get back is taking their boats, you know, and then making it a personal challenge and doing certain things where he's challenging a guy or challenging this guy and the whole team coming around and trying to do what he wants. And I think, you know, once again, he did a terrific job these last five games.
By the way, that burn of the boat speech has been used a couple – Tom Coughlin used to use that one a lot.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, look, you know, this season you were over 50%, 60%, 70%, 80%, might have been 100% of the offense. You know, this is, I think this is your sixth or seventh mm-hmm. season. So, for a running back, taking that toll on your body, you know, it shortens the longevity of the career. I mean, it's really tough. I pray that, you know, of course,
no,
you
I
play for
that.
50 years. But what is it going to take, you know, in your opinion, next season to have the offense to be a little bit more balanced or just more efficient?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, we put Blaine. Blaine came in a bad situation, first off, where we didn't have the camaraderie, the timing of the receivers. And that takes – it doesn't take weeks. That takes years. You know, a lot of these guys, when you talk about some of the best at quarterbacks, they've been with these same receivers, same system for 10, 15 years down the line. So – what I challenge Blaine and a lot of other guys is when we're in the off season, let's go out and run routes, you know, and that's something we didn't get a chance to do because of OTAs
right.
and with all the lockout and those situations. So I think definitely next year Blaine's going to have leaps and bounds because he'll be working with receivers. I mean, whoever they bring in, whatever, you know, whoever's here, I think we always can work on the slants, the outs, the digs. I mean, the simple routes and the sluggos or whatever it may be and get that timing down. And we have a lot of playmakers. Majority of the part was our timing was off, and that takes time to do it. So he had from week 3 to week 17 to get his timing down. And there were some spurts where we had some plays here and there, but you could tell that it just wasn't crisp. And that's not the coaching. That's not – I mean, that's just not being around each other long enough. And so I think for Blaine, you know, a lot of people to be down on him, it's kind of like, you know, this guy is a very great talent, smart kid, works hard. And I think this offseason is going to prove – or next season is going to prove what he's done this offseason, which is taking these guys and building that camaraderie with them.
Last topic. Today, at halftime, they put the Weavers up there on the wall in the pride of the Jaguars. They didn't know it was coming. I don't think you guys knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah, we saw it.
You saw the banner beforehand.
Yeah, we saw it at a walkthrough.
You saw that. So you knew that was coming. What are your thoughts on that happening?
I think that's huge. Mr. and Mrs. Weaver did more than what I think they thought they could do here. I mean, just hearing some of the guys talk on the board about giving them that opportunity to feed their families. And for me personally, what they've done for me, they gave me an opportunity to play this game. And then they believed so much in, they gave me an extension after 3 years. And from that point on, we've grown as an organization, myself included. So I think, you know, what they've done for, I don't know, maybe 100, 200, 300 players and for the people in the community that they've done for giving back, there's nothing that you can say but thank you. You know, I mean, if we could give the money back or try to give something, it'd be too much. So they've done tremendous things for this community, and I wish them well in their next phase and their next adventure of life.
And you've said that keep being Jaguars fans. So maybe you see Dolores wearing that number 32 jersey.
You never know. I hope Mr. Weaver buys one.
Well, man, I wanted to say congratulations myself. You know, I played in the NFL for 14 seasons, playing against the Barry Sanders, the Eric Dickersons, and, you know, a lot of outstanding running backs. By far, your efforts are tremendous.
Thank you.
Regardless of your size or whatnot, you played a game that, you know, for former players to watch it, love it. You get goosebumps watching you play. So, you know, congratulations on your record. Get yourself back, you know, get healthy, get that speed together. Look for you to take this team to the Super Bowl next season.
That's the plan. That's the plan, Super Bowl.
Maurice, thanks a lot. Congratulations on a great individual season, and we look forward to a big year next year.
Thank you.
All right, it's Maurice Jones-Drew popping in here after the ball game, and that'll do it for the Winn-Dixie postgame show. Still to come, we've got the Southern Ford Dealer Scoreboard Show. That's straight ahead. We'll take your calls, tweets, comments, and spend a little bit of time trying to size up what the playoff picture looks like around the NFL. Falcons just scored again. Been a rough go of it in Tampa Bay, that's for sure. It looks like Tampa will be 35-0 now, Falcons, I believe. So, you know, go ahead and pencil Tampa in for the fourth or fifth pick, and the Jaguars will be somewhere in that 5-7 range in the first round. All right, it's been a great year on the Jaguars Radio Network. This is our last moments on the network. So for those of you listening in Jacksonville, we still have some time with you, but I want to thank Linda Fortunato and Ed Rocco, our network engineers, who make it happen throughout the course of the season. Great job as always, guys. For Marco Coleman, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening. The 2011 season is in the books, and the Shad Khan era begins as of Wednesday. And, of course, we'll cover it for you right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.